This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
We targeted David Savard, how hard he is to play against, how tough he is and heavy he plays, and how reliable he is defensively. We knew that he's the type of player that you want on your team.
He's a great guy. He blocks shots. He plays physical, plays hard. He's tough to play against.
I'm just going to try to do my best to play physical and kind of help the team get back on offense. I think it's something that I can do and try to play well defensively and be physical.
Veteran presence on our right side. Guy that's played in some big playoff games. He's got size. He's a righty. And he's a gamer.
And now, he's a Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yes, yes, yes. They said it couldn't be done.
I basically said it couldn't be done. So if you have a plate of crow, I will gladly eat it.
You felt which a lot of people agreed with.
Yeah, even Julian Breesbaugh said he didn't think that this trade happen.
But you know what?
He spelled that out in his press conference.
I will say this to our credit here on Power Lunch. I don't know if it was Friday's show or Thursday's show. They all just run together at this point. We did say, remember we threw it out there, are we missing something else?
Yeah, well, and Elliot Friedman had it in his 31 thoughts. So here is the part.
Well, the part that I was missing.
Here's the part that we were missing, okay? So we were under the assumption that any trade the Lightning made had to be dollars out for dollars in. And the Lightning were able to make this David Savard trade. And while it's close to dollars out, dollars in, it is not dollars out to dollars in. It's dollar in, 75 cents out. So what are they doing with that remaining quarter? That goes to finding wriggle room with their existing roster, guys going to the taxi squad, the long-term injury with Jan Rutta, which Julian Breesbaugh said they could have done it even if Rutta had not been on the long-term injury list, but it actually gives them a little bit more flexibility. So we have pleaded ignorance about some of these particulars of the salary cap as it relates to the long-term injury, but that is the reason why they were able to do it. So we did not know when we spoke earlier that it doesn't have to actually be a dollar out for a dollar in. It can be close to that, and the Lightning can work their existing roster to make up that last 25 cents, basically. That's a big part of it.
Well, and the simplistic way, basically what you said there, but we had thrown it out. Are we missing something? Are we missing a third team getting involved?
Right.
We had mentioned that, and that's what happened, Dave. A third team had to get involved. Now, we can talk about, for whatever reason, they got involved. We were talking off air, and I think you made the right point. Somebody would say, well, what does Detroit get out of this? Well, Detroit, had they not ponied up some money to pay for Savard, they wouldn't have received a draft pick.
Yeah.
And so they felt like that was a risk worth taking.
So people may be wondering, so what is the actual dollar amount that we're looking at here? So David Savard, I'm going to round to basic numbers because it'll be a little easier. Okay. So Savard basically made $4 million. He made a little bit more, but let's just say $4 million. Okay. So that contract is being split three ways. The Jackets are taking $2 million and the Lightning and Red Wings are taking $1 million each, but that's for a full season. We're down to the last month of the regular season. So what do you want to say? We have a quarter left. Yep. Shall we use that as a nice, easy fraction?
Dave, you know me. It doesn't have pictures, so I don't know what you're talking about.
So, the $1 million the Lightning owe actually becomes $250,000, and the same for the Red Wings. So the Red Wings are agreeing to pay David Savard $250,000 for the last month for a fourth-round draft pick. Some of that money is being offset, though, by the minor league contract the Lightning are now paying for Brian Lashoff. So it's not even, right? Lashoff is in the minors, so he's making less. But the Lightning are now picking up that salary. So it's actually less than $250,000 for the Red Wings, give or take. I mean, we're kind of spitballing here. So I don't know. If you're Steve Yzerman, would you do that deal? Would you say, okay, we're going to spend, let's say, about $200,000 we are helping facilitate this trade, but we get a fourth round pick out of it.
Fourth round picks can be valuable.
We just talked about that. Ross Colton's a fourth round pick. Matthew Joseph's a fourth round pick.
Assuming Detroit can have the same luck, and not luck, but the same talents that Tampa Bay has when it comes to evaluating players like that, then that absolutely is a risk you're willing to take. The interesting thing is, Dave, we saw, now you correct me if I'm wrong, the salary implications of that move regarding Savard immediately impacted Tampa Bay, correct? Because they had to go with a lineup.
Right. Jabel Smith was supposed to be in the lineup, but when Savard was added, even though physically he wasn't there, he got added to the roster. So that daily salary prorated from about $1 million kicked in. Yep. So they couldn't add Jamel Smith.
Yes. So, you know, in some ways that had an impact, and that's just kind of where we are in today's salary cap world. And it is complex in many ways. I mean, there are a lot of things. It's hard to follow, you know, who's been put on the waivers, why have they been put on waivers, how much cap relief are you getting when players are on waivers. Dave, you were actually looking at Cap Friendly today, right? And what is it, Shen is on the taxi
squad. Yeah, that may be because it was an off day, but like assuming Savard can, I assume he arrived last night. He was supposed to practice with the team today, can be in the lineup tomorrow. Ben Thomas right now is on the taxi squad. They would not need to, according to Cap Friendly, he's on the taxi squad. So the Lightning have six defensemen, including Savard, on their NHL roster, and they could field a lineup tomorrow night with those six, which is, look, we've been talking about the dollars part of this, and good on Julien Brisebois. I mean, he basically pulled every lever he could and barely got in under the cap for the year. And maybe we can get, we have Eric coming on with us in about 10 minutes. We can get into the price that he paid and why he felt that price was worth it. But now when we look at the Lightning's defense core, you've got on the left side, Hedman, McDonough, and Sergachev. And on the right side, you got Chernak and Savard. And your sixth defenseman can be Cal Foote. It can be Luke Shen. It could be Jan Ruda when he's healthy. It could be Ben Thomas. I think the Lightning feel that is the sort of lineup that they want going into the playoffs. Understanding that it's a long grind, you're probably going to be dipping into your reserves. But to have the first five names that I mentioned as your top five, we're not going to say top four, we'll say top five, because they can work the rotations how they want. That's a pretty formidable top five. And a lot of experience. And a lot of playoff experience, too. Let's not forget, Savard has played, what, 20 games of playoff hockey the last 2 years. 10 with Columbus in 2019 and 10 more last year if you count the play-in series, which I do. That was playoff hockey.
And the Lightning have had a nice front row seat to what he can do, which makes that trade even more enticing.
In addition to the previous years that Columbus made the playoffs, which they didn't make it every year that he was there, but he's had a fair amount of playoff experience at the NHL level.
You'd be hard pressed to find five better defensemen than the Tampa Bay Lightning have right now. You know, I gloated a lot last year, Dave, about Tampa Bay's depth collectively. We've talked about it on this show that, you know, I've said I thought it was the deepest, most talented back end in Lightning history. They went out and helped support that argument by going out and win a Stanley Cup. I mean, you had guys like Braden Coburn, who, by the way, was traded today.
Yeah. Good for Kobe, by the way. He's going to the Islanders.
Yeah. Big, rugged guy that might have an opportunity to see some quality minutes come playoff time, for sure. But certainly a nice insurance for the Islanders to have somebody like that. But we had, you know, you had guys like Coburn and Shen and Bogosian on the back end last year who were in and out of the lineup. And those guys, you talk about combined playoff experience. I mean, you're talking thousands of games, and they played quality minutes at times throughout the year and in the playoffs for Tampa Bay. This year, because of cap issues, you knew you just weren't going to be able to keep everybody. I thought they were still very solid, Dave, top heavy wise when it came to their defensemen, but there were a lot of questions about, all right, what were they going to do depth wise? And we always thought that, you know, maybe they just go out and get a depth piece, and that way you address maybe some issues you have collectively with that unit. But what they ended up doing was they go out and get a top four defenseman. And by all accounts, David Svart is a top four defenseman. I don't think I'm breaking any news there. But what that does, Dave, as you know, it bumps everybody else down a peg, theoretically. And
let me just say, Kalfoot has made great strides this year. Like, his game has grown. It's progressed. We've talked about that. But he still would be entering the playoffs this year with zero games of NHL preseason experience.
No doubt. And as you know, and as our listeners know, playoff hockey, it is however many times faster than the regular season. Now, the good thing about Kalfoot, if he ends up being in that starting lineup, Dave, come playoff time, he's not going to be playing huge minutes. He can get kind of his feet wet a little bit, and they can kind of monitor him during those playoffs as much as you can in a playoff series. But the point being is, now you have a nice discussion about who you want playing with Mikhail Sergachev. Because I tweeted this out over the weekend. I just gave a few random thoughts about the Lightning over the weekend and about the trade. And we got a lot of reaction off of it. But basically, my point was, I would start Savard with Victor Hedman. I'd keep Chernak with McDonough. We can certainly quibble about that. And we can look at John Cooper and say, look, he may have Savard play with McDonough. He may have Savard playing with, you know, Sergachev. So I understand that. That may happen. I'm just telling you, I think when things start happening for real come the playoff time, I would see what Savard does with Hedman. I'd put McDonough with Chernak. I'd have Sergachev. And I said I'd actually start Foote with Sergachev because those two have developed, I think, some interesting chemistry. And while you don't want to poo-poo what Jan Ruta has done for this organization, he's hurt, so I don't know what he's going to be like when he comes back. But I always felt like Jan Ruta, and I've been pretty honest about his abilities on this show, I've always felt like he was more of a bottom-pairing defenseman, Dave, or more of a depth piece. Last year, he certainly played he did a great job in a top-four role. I think in a perfect scenario, though, he's a guy that plays maybe 10, 12 minutes and plays it on a bottom-pairing situation. And that may be the role he plays moving forward, but it just knocks everybody down a peg. And now your depth is as good as it can be, in my opinion, in the salary cap era. And I think Julien Brisebois deserves a lot of credit for going out and not getting a depth piece. He got a top four guy, which in turn helped his depth by knocking everybody else down a little bit.
I think the money quote, no pun intended,
oh boy, Dave.
Word money, but the money quote from Julien Brisebois in his press conference after the trade was made was his comment that if I knew that I had a chance to go out and get David Savard and didn't, and then subsequently we failed in our quest to win the Stanley Cup, and one of the reasons why we failed is we did not have enough depth essentially on our right side on defense, he said that would hurt. It would hurt a lot.
Great job, no doubt.
Yeah, that was the quote. Like, if you are somebody who said, well, they gave up all these draft picks and, you know, why do they have to do this, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that, I think, sums up exactly the cost-benefit analysis in Julian's mind of why he felt, if it were possible to make this deal, why he had to try and go execute it and
you know,
get it done.
To go a step further on that quote, and I thought this was pretty transparent and pretty open, which I actually like, because sometimes these guys are so guarded in terms of the process and what they're thinking. And he basically was like, listen, the players and coaches and the staff, they've made a lot of sacrifices over the last year or so.
Yeah, and he did say that.
I'm asking them to make a lot of sacrifices, but now I have to make a sacrifice here. I mean, I'm paraphrasing a bit.
Murray has to make a sacrifice.
Yeah. So
he's going to have a lot of pressure to find some late round NHLers.
But you know what? You don't make this trade, as I've said before, unless you have faith in your scouting department that you can find draft picks or good prospects without having a first-round pick. What's underrated about the Lightning, Dave, it's not who they draft, although that is impressive. They develop them.
Yeah.
They develop them. That you can draft all you want. You know, just to, before we go to break, the Pittsburgh Pirates were the team I followed growing up, and they were knocked because they were a small market team who had high draft picks but could never develop them. The difference was those players, look at the Tampa Bay Rays. They get a guy like Glasnow. They get, you know, a couple of other guys from the Pirates organization. Bottom line is these guys leave the Pirates and they turn into really good players. It wasn't the drafting. It was the developing.
Yeah,
and the Lightning
that's a big
do a
part
great
of it.
They do a great job of that. And so I think that gives Julian, you know, he's probably 2 inches taller, 4 inches taller when he makes trades like this, because he knows Al Murray, for the most part, is gonna nail some of these picks, and his staff, his organization, they're gonna develop them. And I think that's a huge deal.
So a couple of quick points before we get to Eric. So regarding the draft for this year, the Lightning actually still have 6 draft picks in this upcoming draft as we speak today.
Yeah.
Now, it's possible, as they have to get cap compliant during the offseason, and we've talked about the possibility of moving a player or two, they may accumulate more picks for this summer. So that may be part of the equation here, but we don't know that yet. But their picks are a third. They don't have a first or a second. They have a third, a fifth, a sixth, and then 3/7. So we're going to see what it looks like. Yeah. Like a few years down the road, we're going to look back at the 2021 draft and see what the Lightning were able to do with a third, a fifth, a sixth, and 3/7. And see what that looks like coming out of this draft moving forward in the next couple of years. My other point on Savard, which I know I want to ask Eric about this too. So you have made the point, Greg, like, would the Lightning consider, if they could, sitting a guy to rest him for the playoffs? Mm-hmm. If that is going to happen, I do not think David Savard will be that player. The Lightning have 15 regular season games left, and I think David Savard would benefit, and I'm not saying this because I'm the coach or the GM, but I believe this. And I think that the Lightning believe this too. They want to get him in as many games as possible because he is coming to a new team with a new system. I don't know enough about Columbus's penalty kill as it relates to the Lightning's penalty kill, but if he's going to be a part of that, they want him to get as many reps as possible. I remember for Coleman and Goodrow last year, because they both played PK, Barkley Goodrow said, you know, the PK that we had in San Jose is much more similar to the Lightning's penalty kill than what the Devils did. So he said Coleman probably has a little bit more of an adjustment here, and they got those games in before the pause, and they got the camp before the restart, and we know how good the Lightning's penalty kill was with those two guys on it in the bubble. Savard is not only coming to a new team, it is a team that plays a very different style than Columbus. Mm-hmm. And I think the Lightning want to maximize the amount of time that he can get game action to get acclimated. And part of that is finding a partner. So his partner in Columbus for the last year plus was Vladislav Gavrikov, who is not an offensive defenseman. I mean, he scored a goal here and there. I remember he scored one against the Lightning last year. Yeah. But if you're going to put him with Victor Hedman is a very different type of player, not just that he's an elite player, but he is a different type of player than Gavrikov, who is probably a little bit more stay at home, like a lot of defensemen are. I think that's part of the consideration too. Who is the most stay at home lefty defenseman the Lightning have? Probably McDonough.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of a guy who's always up in the play, he will go up in the play. What does that mean? Does that mean they want to put Savard with a guy who's probably closer to what he has been playing with in Columbus? We're going to find out. Maybe they're like, you know what? He's a pro. He's a veteran. He's a gamer. He's smart enough. We're putting him with Victor, and we're going to see how he does. But you've talked about why Ruda is such a good fit with Hedman, because they work together as a pair.
They do. And you wonder, too, with Savard, we're going to go to break, can he just do that same thing with a guy like Victor Hedman, though? Victor Hedman, obviously different, but do they want more of a defensive guy?
Well, I think we're going to see Savard with different partners as they try and figure this out. But that is, like, it is no small feat here. You get moved at the deadline. I know he's got a family. He's got to figure that out. But you're coming in. It's a new system. It's a new penalty kill.
Right.
Different partners. Like, he needs these 15 games, I think, for his own benefit. Like, it'll help him the most to play as many games as possible before the playoffs begin. That was the point I was trying to make.
We'll talk to Eric Erlandson about this. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. He's Dave Michigan. I am Greg Linelli. What'd you make of the trade? Who does Savard play with? We'll talk more about the trades going on today as well. Steve Ersnick producing. Back after this on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, we should let people know, too, that the Lightning have recalled Mitchell Stevens and Alex Barboulet from Syracuse. And what that means, Dave? Don't know. We actually have a question coming in as we bring in Eric Erlandson from Lightning.
By the way, we did get clarification. Stevens is with the NHL team. You know, he's on the NHL roster. Barboulet is on the taxi squad, okay, at least as of today.
April had the question. If you don't answer this already, before you get to questions, with ABB and Stevens being called up, are Walcott and Smith still on the taxi squad, or did they get sent down?
Well, I had Cap Friendly up, and I didn't look. So while you ask Eric the question,
I'm going to ask Eric.
And maybe Eric knows the answer.
He probably does. He knows many things. Eric Erlandson from LightningInsider.com. He's a busy man these days, and the trade deadline is always, I feel like there are three big days in the hockey season. It's opening nights, it's the trade deadline, and then it's the start of the playoffs. And you know how today goes. A lot of speculation, a lot of rumors. Rarely do they come to fruition, but it's always fun. And of course, the Lightning making a big splash a couple of days ago. What did you make of David Savard coming to the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Well, first of all, it feels like the big day is actually the day before trade deadline day because of all the moves that tend to be made actually before the deadline. There's usually some smaller moves made on trade deadline day, at least in recent seasons. But for the most part, it seems the Taylor Halls of the world get moved actually ahead of the deadline. But for what Tampa Bay did on Saturday in adding David Savard, first of all, for Julien Brisebois to pull off the salary cap gymnastics or whatever you want to call it, I classified it as a master class in cap management, to bring in a player of his caliber in an area that the team I felt needed some help, some depth, and an upgrade, and to not pull anybody off the roster. And we can have the debate about draft picks versus prospects versus players, but you didn't disrupt the roster in any way, shape, or form. You bring in a guy who is on an expiring contract, who's got some motivation, especially with the recent history between Columbus and Tampa Bay. He understands how Tampa Bay plays, even if he hasn't played in the system. I think he was the big prize on the trade market in terms of defensemen, and for Tampa Bay to bring him in, I think is a huge boost, not just to the lineup, but I think to the players in the locker room as well, because players understand. They know the difference between what you have and what you could have, and now what they do have with David Savard, I think, is a big boost for this team.
By the way, Cap Friendly does not have the transactions reflected yet, so the taxi squad still has the same six guys on there as of this moment. But the Lightning, if they make a corresponding move, would announce it, I'm guessing, if it meant sending Walcott back to Syracuse. By the way, Eric, before I ask you more about Savard, have you heard like the roster expansion that happens after the trade deadline? Is that happening for the taxi squad too? Are teams allowed to have more players on the taxi squad after the trade deadline?
You know, I don't know if there's a clarification between the two. In terms of the active roster, it's the same as it's been in the past, where there's no limit on the number of players that you can have on your active roster. You do still have to be cap compliant, and the number of recalls, I believe it's four, is still intact. But with the taxi squad technically being an extension of the minor league team to begin with, I don't know if that's going to expand. I think you're still limited to the seven maximum on that taxi squad. So again, I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it works. And it's a little difficult sometimes with the Lightning because sometimes they don't let you know exactly who's on the taxi squad and who's not. There's not a running tally on it because of the release even today about Alex Barboulet said that he was called up. They didn't say anything about the taxi squad. So a little hard to kind of narrow down the information sometimes.
So the question about Savard I have, and this is something we touched on before we broke, the challenge for David coming to a new team, a new system, both 5-on-5 and on penalty kill from what he has been used to playing. How big of a challenge do you think that will be, and how important are these final 15 regular season games for Savard individually to get acclimated to his new team and a new system?
Well, what I find interesting about trying to get him acclimated to a new system is, like, we're very familiar with John Tortorella, like the safe as death mantra and all that. And, you know, they love seeing their defensemen up in the play. You know, I remember talking to Torts a couple years ago about Seth Jones being in the slot, right? And we see at times we've seen Zach Werenski and Seth Jones below the circles. So they like their defensemen active, but David Savard doesn't fit that mold a little bit. So we don't usually see him being the guy jump in, but we also know how active the Lightning want their defensemen to be and joining the rush and being up on the play and all that. So I think that's going to be an adjustment for David Savard to play that sort of a thought process. Like, it's not like he knows how to play the game. It's instinctual. He's 30 years old. He's been in the league a long time. He knows exactly what he's being asked to do. But I think it is going to take a little bit of time to understand when's the right time to go, when's the right time to join the rush. We don't think of him in offensive numbers. And in fact, the last two goals he scored in the NHL have both come against Tampa Bay, one of the 2019 playoffs, and then earlier this month in a meeting at Amalie Arena. So I think it is important for him to get in as many games as he can. I also think it's important to find out, because I think the prevailing thought is that he'll play with Victor Hedman. We'll see if that's the way it lines up today at practice and then for tomorrow night's game against Nashville. But if that's the case, you want to try and get him as much time as possible to see if there is some chemistry there between those two teams or those two players, if they can work together. So, yeah, 15 games left. I think you want David Savard playing as many as possible before the playoffs start.
Understanding, you have to see how well he performs in that role with Hedman, but I agree with Yui. I think that's where he slots in, and understanding injuries always can play a factor when it comes to the lineup. But let's say everybody's healthy, it's a perfect world we're living in, which never happens, but just run with it here. Who are your top six heading into the playoffs?
Well, Victor Hedman's an obvious, and Ryan McDonagh, and Mikhail Sergachev, and Eric Chernak, and David Savard. So there's five of the six. So then I guess it comes down to if Jan Rutta is healthy, and Julian Brisebois did say on Saturday that I do expect Rutta to be ready to come back before the end of the season. So it comes down then between Cal Foote and Jan Rutta. And, you know, I think they would like Cal Foote to maybe seize that opportunity. But they'll let that play out. It all comes down to meritocracy in a lot of ways. We've seen Sergachev and Foote play together quite a bit this season. We haven't seen too much of Rutta and Sergachev together, so maybe there's some insight into how that's played out. But, you know, I think the top five are locked in, and then the number six comes down to me, at least between Foote and Rutta.
Greg and I were talking before we went on the air, and I confess – I don't know the answer to this because he asked me. So I'll ask you. You're my go-to source when I'm like, I'm not sure I know this, but maybe Eric does. Is there a rule under normal circumstances, and is that rule in effect this year, relating to a player needs to be on the NHL roster to be eligible to be used in the playoffs? And if so, like, how do the Lightning, like guys on the taxi squad, for example, would not be eligible for the playoffs if that were in fact the case. Is that something that is going to happen this year? Or am I not explaining it particularly well?
No, all you have to do to be active for the playoffs is be on a team's 50-man roster. So that includes a reserve. That includes your reserve lists. Again,
hence
the
Black Aces, why they come up and they can be used.
Absolutely, and you know, the two best examples you can think of is Cale Makar. 2 years ago, played in the NCAA Frozen Four. 2 days later, he's playing for Colorado in the playoffs and scores a goal in his NHL debut in the postseason. Chris Kreider went through the same thing when the Frozen Four was here in Tampa at Amalie Arena. He won a national championship, and 3 days later, he signed with the Rangers, and he's playing in the playoffs. So all you have to do is be on a team's reserve list. Again, the call-ups come into play. If there's no playoffs in the AHL this year, and it sure seems like it's trending that way, that there won't be any postseason, then there won't be any issue with whoever you bring up and put on the Black Aces and at least have available to put in the lineup, just as we saw with a guy like Jonathan Marchessault a few years ago.
Talking about Savard and what he brings to the team, we understand he's very good defensively. He's going to block a lot of shots. But much of the problems with Tampa Bay's defensive issues, at least from where I sit, is just competing, being tenacious. And yeah, there's been some blown coverages, and I think that needs to be rectified. How much does Savard help from that aspect? And when you take a look at Tampa Bay's issues defensively, do you feel like it's it's easily correctable because it's more effort and want to than it is structural? Or do you feel like there are some big time leaks in their game right now?
Well, to me, the only leak that I think is truly there is the turnovers. It's something that's popped up here in the last little stretch. You know, they winning 2 out of 7 games. It's where they turn the puck over. And it was a big reason why Nashville was all over them in the first period on Saturday night, because of where they turn the puck over. If you're going to turn the puck over between the blue lines, it's going to create issues, and it's going to put you out of sorts. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just limiting the plays. And I think Ryan McDonagh even referenced this after the game in Columbus, that they're trying to get back to taking a lot of the stretch plays out of their arsenal, taking the hope plays, the hope passes out, and try and create more of a north-south situation similar to what they did in the postseason last year. So I think it's a mental thing more than anything else. The fact is too, you've been playing two rookies on the blue line here with Chernak and Ruta out. You've been playing a lot of Ben Thomas and Cal Foote, and you know that changes the dynamic of how your defense looks as well, as they get used to the reads and the rushes and everything else that they have to do. So I don't think it's anything major. I think that there is areas that they need to shore up, and I think the biggest one is just be better at puck management.
If that is one of the items on your laundry list, what would some of the other ones be as we head down the stretch run here as the team looks to hone its game for the playoffs?
Just winning more battles. You know, I think that's where some of the turnovers come from as well, is just you're not winning enough puck battles, and that's an area where they were so good at in the playoffs last year, from line 1 to 4, from defenseman 1 to 8, as they had to go, you know, the time that Ryan McDonagh missed in the postseason. And maybe that's compete level. Maybe that's just a willingness, a wantiness to win. And we know that you have to do that. One of the things that they talked about, too, is getting traffic in front of the net on a more consistent basis. And we know that that can sometimes be an effort thing and willingness to get to those areas. And, you know, it's a 56-game season. You're 41 games in now. You'd like to see some of these things shore up. But at the same time, you don't wonder if a team like Tampa Bay is just ready for the playoffs. They're just, you know, they do have some things that they know they need to work on, but at the end of the day, I think they're ready for the postseason to begin. I don't think they really care where they finish or who they're going to face in round one of the postseason. I just think they're ready to get there and get going.
With the recent moves that Julian has made the last couple of years, really going for it, giving up some assets to acquire talent right away, you get the sense he understands this is about winning championships, and we'll worry about the future at another time. But do you also feel like part of that equation is he can do these types of things because of their drafting and developing beyond the first round? This allows you to go out and make those types of moves for Coleman and Goodrow and Savard. It's not a guarantee that Al Murray and his staff are going to be able to draft and develop the right guys all the time, but at least up to this point, they've been pretty good at it.
They have. It's a reason they've been so successful, because you've been able to find guys like Braden Point and plug them in, and Anthony Cirelli and plug them in. They're not highly rated draft players when you select them. They're third, fourth round guys that you bring in. And, you know, first and foremost, you take care of the NHL club, and the goal is to win a Stanley Cup. They proved that last year. They're trying to do it again this year, especially with the cap situation we know they're facing next year. But I think also part of that is, okay, you have an Alex Barry-Boulet, and you've only gotten a couple of games of NHL experience for him. Is he a factor down the road as you have to make some roster decisions? You know, Taylor Radish, Boris Kachuk, guys who are playing in Syracuse. But on top of that, you got a guy like Cole Koepka, who just finished his third year at Minnesota Duluth. They lost in the Frozen NCAA title game the other day. He's a highly rated prospect that's already in the system, even though he's not playing within the system. Defenseman Nick Perbix, he lost in the semifinals with St. Cloud State. He's a highly thought of prospect. Sammy Walker's at Minnesota. The two second-round draft picks they had last year with Gage Goncalves and Jack Finley, you know, those are two highly respected prospects that they already have in the system. So, yeah, there is pressure on the scouting staff to find players in the draft. When you start taking away draft picks, maybe it puts a more spotlight on the players that you do select. But there are other ways that you can sort of plug players back into your organizational system, and that is with the players you've already drafted. A lot of them are college guys that you're developing, that are developing at that level. But also there's college free agents, you know, the one they just signed out of Quinnipiac, and he's already playing for Syracuse. So there are other ways to kind of fill in for those areas as well. So this scouting staff, the pro scouts, and the amateur scouts have done a great job of finding talent. I mean, Yanni Gourde is a guy that was a pro player that they brought in after he was cut loose by San Jose. So they have those aspects going as well. So the scouting staff deserves a lot of credit. Maybe there is more pressure when you have less draft picks, but the job they've done so far warrants the ability to kind of part ways with draft picks.
I'm going to ask you a Steven Stamkos question, Eric, and I know that the information we have is the information we have, and there's some information that we don't have, and maybe the team doesn't have that information either, but can you get a sense kind of reading the tea leaves and maybe which way the wind is blowing from some of these answers we've gotten from Julian Breezeball and John Cooper about where Stamkos is as far as his status, kind of what the next couple of weeks might look like for him?
Yeah, it's I look at this two ways. You've heard John Cooper use the word precaution with holding him out and trying to wait for more information, and that offers some optimism that this isn't going to be anything long-term. We know the organization's history when it comes to players who are injured. They always err on the side of caution, and if it takes a little bit longer for a player to come back, it takes a little bit longer for a player to come back. But the flip side of that is it was a non-contact situation that forced him out of the game against Columbus on Thursday, kind of stretching. And when you stretch and then you think of the surgery that Stamkos had twice in the last calendar year, you do start to go, I sure hope there's no relation there. So I guess I'm cautiously optimistic that this is only going to be a short-term situation with him. But there is that little itch in the back of your head that goes, that was non-contact. I don't like the way he left the ice. But again, the information is what we have. My guess is he is out the rest of this week, so we won't see him Tuesday or Thursday or Saturday against the Panthers back home. We'll see what it looks like next week when the team returns to face Carolina on back-to-back nights. So I guess when they say that they're waiting for more information, they want to get back to Tampa to get more information from their team doctors, it's just kind of a wait, see, and hope for the best situation.
And real quick, like, that is legit. Based on the current protocols that are in place, if this were 2 years ago, you know, they could fly Stamkos home and have him see a doctor right away. It probably makes sense based on the fact, unless you want to send him home in a private jet, right, that
yep,
he just kind of stays with the team and they try and work it best they can through therapy and then get him looked at when the team returns home.
Similar to the bubble last year.
Yeah.
When he started to have the issues towards the end of training camp, if he broke protocols, it guaranteed he was going to miss at least 2 weeks. So they were trying to push through that and hope that things worked out, because once you leave the bubble, there are protocols that would make you ineligible until you clear those protocols. And it's a little similar this year. In normal circumstances, they probably, if it's related, and this is a big if, I'm not trying to lay anything, but if it's related to the surgeries, you'd probably send him back. I believe he had the surgery done in Cleveland. You'd probably send him back to the surgeon that did the operation, right? But, you know, you send them home and then get information from your own doctors and see where it goes, and then make your decisions based on that.
E, do you anticipate the Lightning doing anything else? Should they do anything else? And has your maybe tone changed one way or the other when it comes to the Central and where you'd like to see Tampa Bay finish with, you know, Carolina and Florida playing very well?
Well, I didn't think they were going to be able to pull off a move like David Savard to begin with, so I'm not sure what to expect in the next hour and a half or so before the trade deadline comes up at 3 p.m. I would be surprised if they can pull off another move. It would probably create a situation where you'd have to bring in a third team, just as they did the other day, just to alleviate some of the cap hit that you would have to take. So I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for something, although certainly Julian Breezeball said he's not turning his phone off until, you know, before the 3 p.m. deadline. So there's always a chance that something else could be done. As far as the Central, you know, if we've talked a lot about whether or not there's a quote-unquote reward for finishing first in this division because of who's going to finish fourth. But in watching Nashville and what they won 10 of 11 because they beat Dallas in a shootout last night, like, is that a reward if you finish first to face a potential Nashville team that is as hot as anybody in the league going into the playoffs? That's why I say I think for Tampa Bay, it doesn't matter. Is one matchup maybe more difficult than another on paper? It is, for sure. But I think at the end of the day, they just want to know that they're in the playoffs. I think they would like home ice for the first round, if possible, if they can do that. But beyond that, I don't think they really care who their first round matchup ends up being, whether it's Florida or Carolina.
Last question, as a whole, Harry, any surprises so far for you? And who really do you think upgraded, and maybe who didn't, determining, you know, what they got and what they had to give up?
Well, the Nick Foligno trade to Toronto is an interesting one for me. You know, there's a lot of talk that they could probably use some help on the back end, and then they bring in a high-character guy, and Foligno doesn't bring a ton of offense, but he can bring some to you, but he plays the game hard. He plays the game, quote-unquote, the right way. He's an interesting forward to fit into that group in Toronto. Boston's interesting to me, picking up Taylor Hall as well as Curtis Lazar from Buffalo. Well, and as we say that here, we're looking at Sharks trading Frederick Claussen to Tampa Bay for goalie Magnus Crona, who's playing at the University of Denver. That's from Pierre LeBrun. So we'll keep an eye on that one.
Ooh, breaking news, Z. Breaking news.
Breaking news. I kind of forgot where I was on my thought train there.
You were talking about Taylor Hall.
And Taylor Hall to Boston.
Yeah.
So, Taylor Hall is a known player because he's a number one overall pick, but you start to look at the track record of Taylor Hall, and outside of his MVP year when they made the playoffs and they lost to Tampa Bay in the first round of 2018, Taylor Hall hasn't produced a ton. He has
you can go ahead and say
Sabres this year.
You can say he's overrated. Go ahead. You can say it.
I think based on his play, I think he is.
Yeah.
And but I also think, because a lot of people are trying to say, well, geez, Nick Foligno drew a first-round draft pick from Toronto, why can't Taylor Hall get that? I think that tells you all you need to know about Taylor Hall's status, that it's a second-round pick, not a first-round pick for a former number one overall pick. So I'll be interested to see how he fits into that lineup. Does it have the potential to work out? Yeah, but it had the potential to work out in Arizona this year. It had the potential to work out in Buffalo this year, and it hasn't. So I think the Bruins are taking a big risk in bringing in Taylor Hall.
All righty. Yeah, we retweeted that out with Pierre LeBrun, and we'll sure talk about that and where Frederick.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is Claussen going to come to the NHL roster? Because Crona clearly is not drawing a salary. He's a prospect, goalie prospect.
And I don't know if
Claussen's going to the taxi squad. Was Claussen even in San Jose, or was he in their minor league?
His last game, let's put it this way, his last game at the NHL level was February 22nd. So he
may already be in a taxi squad situation, in which case the Lightning would not have to expose him to waivers.
Yep.
And he would not go against the cap, which would make sense.
28, yep, left-handed 28. Shot.
Former New York Ranger.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's played for a few teams, if memory serves.
Fifth round pick by Ottawa in 2011.
He's bounced around for sure the last couple of years, no doubt. So, all right, well, we'll keep an eye on it. Depth, you can never have enough depth.
Yeah, Claussen was on the Sharks taxi squad. So a trade like that, just confirming, Eric, taxi squad to taxi squad, that's a straight swap. Basically, it's like going from the minor leagues with one team to the minor leagues with another team.
Absolutely, and I just continue to tell people, just think of the taxi squad as the extension of the minor league team, not the NHL team.
That's exactly it. E, great job. I'm sure you're going to be all over this, lightninginsider.com, and I'll join you for a breakdown of all this on, Wednesday?
Is that when we're doing the show? At some point, we'll get a post-trade deadline podcast in here in the next couple of days, but it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, E.
Thanks, boys. Eric. Talk to you soon.
All right, that's Eric Erlandson. Check out his work, lightninginsider.com. All right, we'll come back and we'll kind of set everything back up for you so you understand what is going on. Dave Mishkin over there. I'm Greg Linnelli, and we will take a break. Get those questions in at Bolts Radio. It is Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play.
the perfect social distancing distraction for your lunch hour. This is Power Lunch, only on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
All right. Glad you're with us here. It's always busy on a Monday, but especially when you've got the trade deadline happening today. And a
so
lot of
Freddie Claesson, I remember his year with the Rangers, which was 18-19. But Eric's right, he was drafted by Ottawa. Last year, he was in the Devils system, this year with San Jose. He's a lefty. And again, this is just a guy who's got some pro years of experience under his belt that provides some depth on defense on the left side.
Yes, and you can never have enough depth. This came from Brian Burns. Dave, this happened a little bit ago. Just reiterating about Mitchell Stevens and Alex Barboulet, brought up from Syracuse for conditioning. And for those just joining us, the Lightning did recall them. But Burns tweets out a little bit ago for conditioning, whatever that means. So I you know.
I don't really understand. I saw that in the press release too. Usually a player is like a Mitchell Stevens would go to Syracuse for conditioning. So he was not exposed on the waiver wire for that reason.
Sure.
So I confess, I don't really understand what being up for conditioning means.
I mean, it'll all come together at some point, but you know, there have been some trades being made. We want to get your thoughts on Savard and what this means. And, you know, Dave, lost in all of this, it's interesting. It's kind of the game on Saturday was, you know, kind of taking a backseat.
Still not good enough defensively.
No, it's not. And Vasi, again, I just think is continuing to make his case that he is one of the best players in the world, not just the best goaltender, because I think he has that to his credit. But it isn't good enough. And I don't know what to make of it, Dave, because as I said before, I think it may be more effort and just concentration than it is something else.
We've talked about that. And I don't mean to differ from Eric, because what he says about puck management is important. But I think there have been some instances. It's been more than just turning pucks over and fueling the other team's transition attack or allowing them to have a lot of the possession. Like you have it, you don't have it very long. You make a poor decision with it. They get it back and they're just kind of applying relentless pressure. I think that, I mean, you look at the chances. So the one right off the bat, 2-on-1, Granlund, that was off the rush. I don't even think that was a turnover. I just think that was a kind of a weird play off a sloppy read, essentially. How many chances did Rem Pitlick have in the first period? I mean, the guy's wide open in front. Great opportunities. Grimaldi had a rebound chance. Vasilevsky's looking to his left. The puck's to his right. And Grimaldi shoots it into Vasilevsky's right pad. Like his pad was down. It was there. That was a great A. And how about the one where late in the period, Grimaldi took the shot. I think it nicked off McDonough. And Vasilevsky made that save where like he lunged for it. It was fluttering. It was going in the net. And he kind of swatted it away like a fly with his glove. So again, another first period in which he was under siege, and in a way kind of similar to the Thursday game against Columbus, the Lightning did better having the puck more in the second and third. I think they raised their pace of play level, which helped, but they were still giving up some dangerous chances. I mean, Cunnan hit the post in the second. Cunnan had a point blank chance in the second. They allowed the goal to Ellis that was overturned on the offside challenge. So Vasilevsky, again, earned the number one star that Phil gave him.
He was fantastic.
After the game on Saturday.
Yeah, he was just phenomenal. Bob wants to know, looking past the next 20 games and hopefully a long playoff run with the win-now mentality, is Savard a rental?
Yes.
Do you feel it's a lot to give up? He says, do you feel like it's
a lot to
give up?
Sorry, go ahead. Finish the
tweet. No, I agree with you. Do you feel it's a lot to give up for 40 games with the Bolts, if so?
I will eat a week's worth of crow if they can keep David Savard after this year. I just don't know. Unless they're moving some other major pieces. Savard, first of all, will fetch a pretty healthy contract, I would think, on the free agent market. And I just don't know. I mean, the Lightning are going to have to shed salary. That's the expectation off of the existing roster before Savard was even added.
Yeah.
So unless there's some huge seismic change on the roster that they just move heaven and earth to keep David Savard, and it means moving a lot of other guys that we probably are not expecting to get moved. I just don't see that happening. And I think you touched on the willingness to trade draft picks, Greg. I mean, the Lightning have shown that they can draft well in the later rounds. They can find the Barry Boulets and Odin Tufto, the guy from Quinnipiac that Eric mentioned, who are undrafted players. And then they have shown that they can develop players who maybe later round picks, but their ceiling is moved because they are going through this system that allows them to elevate their play.
And look what they've done basically every year over the last three or four. They've had like two guys that have emerged almost every year from their minors that have come up and taken on bigger roles. You know, whether it's Braden Points or Anthony Cirelli, whether it's Yanni Gourde, whether it's this year, Ross Colton, Matthew Joseph, who's had a little bit of a resurgence. And then on the back end, you traded for these guys. But, you know, again, and think about this too, Dave. Think about this too. And I don't know what to make of it outside of there are ways you can build a team. There are different ways you can build a team. The Lightning up front have done a really good job, I think, of developing and drafting those players. And they've plugged pieces in with, you know, bringing a Yanni Gourde in, claiming him off waivers, or whether it's getting a good Rowan Coleman to complement the guys they have. But look at the back end. They've basically traded for all of those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one way to do it. Now, you have to have the assets to give it up. I don't think as an organization you can be completely great depth-wise, because it's just hard to do. But the Lightning have said, all right, you know, we need some help on the back end. We've got Victor Hedman. But let's see if we can go out and try and get other people's best players.
So let's break your roster, your NHL roster, into it's more than two categories. But we're going to make it nice and clean because you like that, Greg. You like the black and white. So I'm going to make this black and white for you, okay? Yes. So you have your game breakers, and then you have the rest of the roster. The game breakers usually need to be top picks. If not by you, then by somebody else, and you're trading a major asset to get that player. Like Sergachev was ninth overall. Lightning had to trade their third overall pick, Jonathan Drouin, to get Sergachev. Braden Point was a diamond in the rough because a player that is as much of a game breaker as Point typically isn't found in the third round. So the Lightning definitely hit that one out of the park. And Nikita Kucherov, I mean, he was a second round pick, so it's not like he went in the sixth round, right? But I think if they had that draft to do over again, he would probably, in the 2011 draft, he would probably be like a top one or a two pick, right, from that year. Maybe top three. I'll have to go back and see who else was available in that draft. So the Lightning have done well in that regard, but that's the part where if you are going to be trading your first and second round picks regularly, it becomes harder to find those game breakers. But the Lightning have game breakers, and most of their game breakers are still relatively early in their careers. I mean, Braden Point is, what, 25?
Yeah.
Nikita Kucherov,
what is he, 26?
Is 20. He's 28 this year. I can't remember if he's had a birthday yet.
Yeah.
You know, Vasilevsky, we're going to call him a game breaker, and he was a first-round pick.
Sure.
You know, he's 26, 27.
Mm-hmm.
Sergachev, you know, went in the 2016 draft.
Yeah.
Then, you know, yes, Hedman went second overall. He's a game breaker. Steven Stamkos, now 30, 31 years old, number one overall pick. So you have those guys. So you try and find, you know, the Matthew Josephs, the Ross Coltons, the, you know, Chernak was a second round pick. I mean, I know they got him in a deal.
Yeah.
But I mean, would you call Chernak a game breaker? I'm not sure that I would call him a game breaker, but he's a really, really good NHL player.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a relatively high pick. But the Lightning have found enough other guys beyond the first and second round that we may not term as game breakers, but they're really good NHL players. But if you were starting from scratch, this is something we've talked about with the Red Wings, I think, that they have not, their first round picks have, to this point anyway, they haven't found enough game breakers yet. Maybe they have some guys they've drafted recently who haven't yet turned pro that are going to fit that bill. Or maybe some of their first round picks are going to evolve into game breakers. But that's the part where you kind of need those high picks to find those kinds of players, unless you can find a point in the third round. But that's really hard to do.
Unless you can draft and develop like the Lightning have. And teams have been able to do that. So it's just interesting. But
and points ascension was as much development as anything else.
It was,
he worked on his skating. Yeah, exactly.
Greatly improved. It really did. Cirelli, same thing. What I was saying was, Dave, like the last 3 or 4 years, you've taken a look, though, at their forward position. They've had, and really overall, a couple of guys that have always come up in their minor leagues and have slotted in to the to the roster. That's a big deal. And we're seeing it this year, too, with Colton. Barboulet might be that next guy knocking on the door for next year. So as long as you have a couple of guys that are knocking on the door and that core is still in place and they're relatively young, you can take risks like the one we have seen the last 2 years, where you give up assets like first-round picks or top prospects because you have a few guys who can slide into a role and perform pretty well. So it's all fascinating. We'll take more of your questions tomorrow. The Lightning will take on the Preds again, and hopefully we'll see David Savard in the lineup and hopefully get an update maybe on Steven Stamkos as well. Dave, this was fun on a Monday. A lot to get to.
Yep.
We appreciate everybody listening.
Good stuff.
Talk to you tomorrow, buddy.
And thanks to Eric, for sure.
Yep. Eric Erlandson. Check out his work again, lightninginsider.com. Thanks to Steve Versnick as well. I am Greg Linnelli. Enjoy the rest of the day, everybody. We'll talk to you again tomorrow on Lightning Power Play.